Hello, 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 everybody. Hello, Atlanteans. Hello, global citizens. And hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the co-host of the Polititeam podcast, which myself and my high school best friend, Damian Galvin, host every single Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to raise political conversation, deconstruct public policy, and to inform you guys about today's major issues to create a more equitable future for all of us tomorrow. Now, in today's podcast, it's our second part of the Democratic National Convention Special Edition series, where myself and Damian are going to be talking about speakers everywhere from Barack Obama, the former president, and the former vice president and current presidential hopeful, Joe Biden. Their speeches, their content, the advertisements posted during that DNC, and just the overall fervor, the overall tone the Democratic Party took during the DNC last week. We're going to be talking about Wednesday and Thursday, and more specifically the last 2 days of the convention, and providing some feedback, some predictions about next week's RNC, Republican National Convention, which myself and Damian will also cover on Wednesday and Friday. That said, we hope that you have a great rest of your weekends. We hope you enjoy this episode, and make sure to visit www.polititeampodcast.com. That is www.polititeampodcast.com. to find more information about our initiative and connect with our sponsors. Thank you so much, and now today's episode.
And we're rolling. Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Polititeen. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Varun.
Hey, guys, my name is Varun Kadathala. I'm the co-host of the Polititeen podcast, here today with Damian to talk about issues that we're facing as Americans, as citizens of this great country. That we're living in right now, that we're so blessed to be living in. Now, today, we're going to be starting our second part of our first series with Polititeen here. It's called the DNC. We're going to be wrapping around what the DNC was last week. As you guys know, the Democratic National Convention happened on a certain week before the election for 4 days. It was last week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And we're going to be talking about the last 2 days of the convention, Wednesday and Thursday, where we had speakers from everywhere from, you know, Joe Biden to people like we had Barack Obama come on Thursday or Wednesday and talk about issues that he sees with America today. So we're going to be talking about a lot of interesting speeches, interesting content, and a quick plug to, first of all, our amazing team. We have an amazing research director in Julia Harmon. Thank you so much for inspiring our content, and an artwork team with Jada Pilling and Yi Shen. So first of all, thank you to them, and visit our website at www.polititeenpodcast.com for more amazing content.
Yeah, definitely. And I think just some housekeeping out of the way, obviously, go check out our Patreon. Like Varun said, you know, you can find our Patreon on our website. Another thing, Varun is not recording with his microphone today. We're doing a lot of big upgrades in order to keep amazing content coming for you guys. And in doing so, we're having some technical bumps here and there, and we're really getting over them. And I'm really proud of the way that we're working. Yeah. You know, you got to take a couple steps back every once in a while to move a bunch forward. And I think that we're really doing that here. We've gotten a bunch of, you know, like I said, technical upgrades that I think is really going to help us make the podcast a lot better and a lot more enjoyable for all of you. So once again, thank you guys so much for your patience in the last 2 weeks. And thank you guys for tuning into today's episode, where we're going to have an amazing conversation. It's crazy to think, first of all, you know, it's crazy to think that it was only this Friday that Obama was, or this Wednesday, I'm all over the place. It was only this Wednesday. It felt like it was so long ago that he spoke.
Yeah, it did. It really did. Because I think that we got overshadowed by how many amazing speakers we had over those 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday. I think that the highlight of the convention was Wednesday and Thursday. I think delegates did vote on nominating Joe Biden on Thursday as a presidential candidate. I think that was one of the most beautiful things to see happen ever since we had, I think that's the most beautiful thing in the convention at all, watching all 4 days of the convention, watching these delegates come out. Now, before I give my take on why I thought this was beautiful, I think I would like to give you a chance to talk about that, comment on that, Damian.
Well, I think first and foremost, it was beautiful because it was a sense of unity. And I think that that's what we expected from the DNC. It was a sense of unity. And it's very interesting because, you know, with all due respect to the current presidency, and I genuinely mean that, unity is not something that we really hear a lot in this administration. And it doesn't just come from this administration. It comes from, you know, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. It comes from different figures. But right now, because of the political tension, there hasn't really been a break right? There hasn't been a break to just come together as Americans. And no matter what side of the aisle you're on, I think that the DNC did bring people together as Americans. I think Mike Bloomberg, you know, whatever you have to say about him, I think that he said it best. He said, I'm asking you to vote for Joe Biden, not because Donald Trump is a bad person, but because he's done a bad job. And it's been a really good, you know, it's been a really good break kind of from the harassment on both sides. I wouldn't say maybe, you know, I think that Donald Trump is to blame for that political tension, but there's fault on both sides for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that Mike Bloomberg, I'm not the biggest supporter of Mike Bloomberg for his actions, but I think that he made a good point in saying that, you know, you're not voting for Joe Biden because of who Trump is. I think empathy plays a role, but also it's more importantly, what Trump has done to impact our lives and what Joe Biden can do to impact your lives better. Now, I did find an eternal flaw with the Democratic National Convention and their messaging this year, which I'll talk about later. But I did want to kind of mention before that what I thought about the delegation that came together. Now, if you're looking at 2016, prior conventions, people tune out during that voting process. That's one of the most boring parts, if not the most boring part, of the convention in prior years. That's where, you know, big channels like CNN, big channels like Fox News, HLN, they all post their, and CBS, they post their commentary and advertisements during that time frame where delegates come up and literally just cast their votes. This year was very, very different. And I say that because when I saw delegates, I went to the bathroom, right? I was like, this is my break. I'm going to the bathroom, getting some food, getting some popcorn, ice cream, and watching the convention. Because obviously that was the day before my birthday. I was chilling out. Now, the beautiful thing was that I came back just to see a guy with a plate of calamari, like on stage with somebody who was a delegate for the convention. And that was so beautiful. They were on a beach with a guy, a plate of calamari, Damien. It was beautiful to see not only unity, but the diversity of our states, the beautifulness of the American, just the American states, the 50 states all got to showcase who they were as a people. We had, from our state, we had hopefully a guest on our podcast, Dakama Williams, come out. We're in the works of getting on the podcast and talking about our campaign for the Senate. But besides the point, she came out and highlighted who Georgia was. We had people from across the nation. Vermont had Bernie Sanders in the background. But everything was just a testament to how beautiful the states are. And never before have I seen just the brevity of the quality of our states. And I think it was one of the most beautiful, it was the most beautiful delegate kind of come together that I've ever seen in a convention in the past, ever since I've watched conventions.
Yeah, no, I think that beauty is definitely a statement here. I think there was a lot of amazing things coming out of the DNC. And I think right now we're giving kind of the non-political part of it, right? We're giving the outsider. But now we got to kind of dive into the politics here. Yeah. Joe Biden gave a damn good speech. And he proved to everyone, I believe, that he's mentally competent. I think that he shut down everyone that was saying something bad about his ability to be a good speaker, to be an affluent speaker. I think that really what we were missing was what we got, if you get what I'm saying. We were missing 20, I think it was a 22-minute speech, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, yeah.
A 22-minute speech. Obviously, there's hiccups here and there. I mean, that's anyone speaking. We have hiccups here in an hour, like 80 times. But he spoke for 22 minutes fluently. He spoke proficiently. He spoke well. And he spoke beyond anything like a decent man and someone that knows exactly what they're talking about and exactly the point they're trying to get across. I think that before we were running on clips of his hiccups, but right here we got a large clip showing that he can go 22 minutes without giving one hiccup and delivering an amazing message that shows unity and can support his campaign greatly, which is something that I think that we've been missing over the past, I don't know, 6 months maybe.
Yeah, I think we have. And you make a great point by mentioning that it was a damn good speech, because it really was. We had Biden speechwriters coming out and saying that that was Biden's best speech he's ever made in his life. CNN commentators Wolf Blitzer, Jake Tapper saying that was the best speech they've seen Biden make. We saw Chris Wallace, four Fox News commentators coming out with Chris Wallace and saying that was a damn good speech, a tremendously effective speech. So Joe Biden, in that 22-minute time frame, I believe, was a tremendously effective speaker. Now, I think when you're talking about the flaws of the whole convention, you make a very good point by saying it was very different. Because during the entire 3 days of the convention, I saw a major flaw and a bunch of, in terms of political science, there was a major flaw. Because If you look at how Democrats won the House in 2018, they won the House not by bashing upon Donald Trump as much. They didn't even mention Trump as much. They talked about what their plan was for the working class, the middle class of America, and their downright policies. Now, that's been missing during the entire 3 days of the convention before Biden's speech. Democrats were basically talking about how messed up the country was. Sorry for that. We're going to have to censor that. But how screwed up this country was, and never actually mentioned concrete policy. Now, what Joe Biden came out and did, he mentioned concrete policy. Not as much as I would like, but he mentioned concrete policy. And that's what made his speech so different than what everybody else had in the lineup. Now, I think that going back on what you said, Trump's whole defining statement has been Sleepy Joe. You know, Joe Biden, who doesn't know how to speak. Joe Biden was dementia. Joe Biden was memory loss. The Joe Biden we saw in that 22-minute segment, the entire thing, he never tripped up.
Yeah.
There was not a single time where I asked myself, is this guy mentally competent? Because he made it clear that he was a mentally competent person and, more importantly, the right choice for president. And he made that clear by speaking with passion. There was times when he spoke like a person who he is. He's lost a lot in his life. He spoke like that. There was times when he was grateful for what he had. There was times when he was a strong. I think the most strong point in his speech, Damien, was when he was basically indicting President Trump, when he was speaking with passion, with fervor. He was speaking like a strong candidate. And that's what I think that we've been missing from Joe Biden, that strong candidate who can attack somebody else without ever pausing to think about their thoughts, attack somebody else without ever pausing to think about where they're going, attack somebody else fervently and strongly. And that's what Joe Biden is going to be and we need Joe Biden to be going to the election. And I think that Donald Trump has been shortcutting his opponent for a very long time. And now I think he's facing a very different Joe Biden going into November.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's facing an extremely different Joe Biden. And I think that he's facing an extremely different Democratic nominee in the sense of just the competition, frankly. I think the strongest point for Joe Biden's speech for me was when he showed compassion towards the American people. And he said, but he said something along the lines of, I'm sorry for those who have lost during this time. I know what it feels like. I know what it feels like to have that black hole open up inside of you and feel like it's eating away. And it was something that it was a moment where it's like you look back and we try to be here and we try to be on the podcast and we try to be centrist. I mean, it's gotten to the point, and we said it when we began the podcast, it's so difficult to remain centrist, right? I will always say that Republicans are doing a good job when they're doing a good job, and I'll say that Democrats are doing a bad job when they're doing a bad job. But when you have a president that's saying it is what it is, and you have a presidential candidate saying, I know what it is, and I've been there too, and it hurts, and I understand you, it's such a different perspective. And it's something that, you can say that it's playing politics, but at the end of the day, sometimes what the American people need is politics to be played, right? You can say, oh, I like Donald Trump because he speaks his mind. He says whatever he wants, but sometimes that's not what we need. And the American people, the most important thing is that the American people aren't being lied to. Joe Biden does know what it feels like to lose. Joe Biden has lost. Joe Biden has lost three of the biggest people in his life. He lost his first wife, his 15-month-old daughter, and his son, right? And he understands what it is. He understands what pain is. And on that point, I want to trace back a little bit to what I was saying. When Joe Biden's Donald Trump, is facing a completely different DNC here. And I say that because of this. Joe Biden's attacking points have been the following. They have been Donald Trump's attacking points have been the following. They've been Joe Biden is mentally incompetent and he's far left liberal. And they want to take away your police. I'm the president of law and order, right? You can see the last you can see the last one as an attack slash as a compliment to himself. So let's take these let's take these point by point, right? So in the first one, we have Joe Biden is mentally incompetent. Well, he just gave a 22-minute speech that shows that he is damn not mentally incompetent, and he is way better at talking to the American people. He's more empathetic. He's more complacent, if that's the right word that I'm looking for here. He is more – not complacent. He's more – how do I say? he's more unifying. I think that that's what I'm trying to say. He's more unifying. And beyond that, he can be unifying and he can be empathetic without having a slip up, right? Which is what you had been attacking him for the past Lord knows how long. All right. So the second point I think I said here was that he's far left. This has always been an absurd argument because we know that Joe Biden isn't far left. He's not Bernie Sanders. He's nowhere near that. If anything, I think that some leftists would consider him to be on the right. So that's always been that's always been an odd point. And I think that in that speech, again, you killed kind of two birds with one stone. In that speech, he showed that he is not far left. He showed that he is an American trying to unite Americans. And the third and final point doesn't come from Joe Biden. It doesn't get destroyed by Joe Biden, rather. Destroyed's the wrong word. We try to refrain from that word. Doesn't get countered, I would say, by Joe Biden, right? It gets countered by his vice presidential nomination, right? The vice president that he chose destroys the law and order thing. If you want to talk about law and order, like I said last time, you have to talk about Kamala Harris. You have to talk about Kamala Harris if you're going to talk about law and order. So what is he going to run on? There's no emails this time, right? There's no defunding the police. Defunding the police has already been proven to be an ineffective strategy. Ineffective strategy in the way that he trying to point fingers, saying that Joe Biden is trying to take away your police. That's already been proven to not be true. I think that his base might believe it, right? I think that that's what's going to end up happening. His base is going to believe it, but I don't know necessarily if the swing voters are going to believe it, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. And you make a very good point. I think that, you know, Trump plays upon divisiveness. And right now, we're the most unified we've been in the past couple of decades. Look at the Black Lives protest outside. Look outside of your window and look at what's going on right now. This is a historic revelation of our democracy. We're all coming together and we're all supporting one movement. I think that to use the word divisive right now is just, it's not accurate, because right now we're the most unified we've been in a very long time, and the part of that unity. Now, you see Trump going on Twitter and saying the Democrats omitted under God from the pledge all four nights of the DNC. Now, they never did that. They never did that. And I heard them say under God every single night of the DNC. Sure. Some delegates from the Muslim caucus didn't say it. Sure, some delegates from other caucuses didn't say it. But the fact of the matter is that the DNC did not omit the word from the pledge. Yes, some people exercised their rights in not saying it, but that's not enough to indict the DNC of omitting under God. Now, I think Trump plays upon that divisiveness, but that's his only card. The fact that he had to say they omitted the phrase under God from the pledge is just playing upon that non-existent divisiveness that he tries to pull upon. Now, you talk about Trump having to pull upon that divisiveness and having to pull upon these flaws. Joe Biden is really just exactly what the Democrats want to put up. Like I said last time, he's an old white man. And all Trump could push upon was the fact that he's mentally incompetent. Well, now he's not. He's just proved that. Mm-hmm. And really, the issue is that Joe Biden has multiple speeches on how he has policy tailored towards the American people. His whole speech that day was not enough, but it was a lot of content on policy. Trump doesn't have a direction. He had a direction in 2016. His direction was a wall. His direction was making Mexico pay. His direction was getting out of the Paris Climate Agreement. Now he has no policy. He's running upon pure American hatred, and that's not going to get him anywhere, I don't think. I think that it's just his strategy has to be different. And I think the only way, and Damien, I'm saying this because I just have this vindication on how the RNC can succeed and triumph. The only way for the RNC to triumph next week would be for Trump to talk about real policy, talking about how he would help the middle class, talking about how he would help these growing groups of Americans. Because if you look at it in terms of voter turnout, wealthy African Americans, wealthy Latinos, they don't vote based upon discrimination that's beyond them. They vote based upon economic policies. They vote based upon policies that would get them more liberties, more money, more less taxation. That's what they vote upon. And to tailor towards that vote, you have to introduce policy and not talk as much about discrimination. And he's not going to get the people who are going to vote upon discrimination, because he, in and of himself, is discriminatory. He has to vie for that vote of these people who don't care about it as much. They care about how they can increase their wealth, increase their success. And that's what he has to tailor his speech towards. If he plays upon Joe Biden being slow, Hell no. That is going to ruin his chances. But if he does play upon that policy, I think that he would actually have a chance.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean to cut you off, by the way. I actually just have a question. Is the DNC always held before the RNC?
I actually don't know. Let me look it up as you
Okay.
Speak.
All right. Well, I'm gonna say this. Let's say it's not, right? Let's say sometimes it switches around. I'm assuming that they're independent, and that oftentimes it switches around, right? But in the DNC being first, they won. And I'll tell you why. They won because it's already in Trump's head, right? It's already in Trump's head. He's not thinking about the policy he's going to give. He's thinking about what he's going to say about Michelle Obama. He's not thinking about the policy he's going to give. He's thinking about what he's going to say about Kamala Harris. He's not thinking about the policy that he's going to give. He's thinking about what's he going to say about the opponent. And right now, what he doesn't understand is that there shouldn't be, in any sense, an opponent. Because he is supposed to have the upper hand, right? What's supposed to be happening here, if you look at past presidential elections, is the president is supposed to be saying, I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done that. And then the guy running against him is supposed to be saying, he's this, he's that, he's this, he's that, he's this, he's that. But what's happening, and a really odd switch, is it's Joe Biden going, I've served for 50 years. I also have lost family. I have implemented policy to support communities. I have done this. And it's Trump going, no, he hasn't. He's bad. He's mentally incompetent. He doesn't understand that he shouldn't be attacking right now. He should be defensive, not only because of the fact that we're in a pandemic, but because he's the president of the United States. He already won once. That means that there's enough Americans to elect him again. So he doesn't need to be bashing Joe Biden. He needs to be getting back that same base that right now he has lost. It's gone.
Yeah.
His base is diminishing. It is going away. It is hiding. And frankly, it is not only all of those things. More so, it is turning. And it's turning blue. And it's turning blue quickly. I don't think that he's going to be able to talk about his policy in the RNC. I think that I asked you last time, Varun, and we talked about this, I think, 2 days ago when we were in school. Who's going to speak at the RNC? Who's going to speak? It's going to be a very important thing. Who's going to speak? By the speakers, you can tell where the conversation is headed. The couple that aimed their guns at Black Lives Matter protesters are going to speak there. So what's the conversation going to be about? Joe Biden wants to take away your guns. What's the counterargument? Joe Biden is a lawful gun owner. There's no grasp to any of his attacks anymore.
No.
There's just no grasp. Again, by seeing who's going to speak at the RNC, we already know that it's not about policy, Varun. It's not going to be about policy.
No, of course not. That's what I saw. That's what I think I believe in. I was going to say it if you didn't. I was going to say that, you know, having the two gun owners who pointed their guns, brandished their weapons against protesters who did, they did, yes, intrude upon the property, but it was still brandishing guns either way. Yeah. Having them speak is a political statement, and it's not about policy. It's about oh, they're going to take away your guns. You can't defend yourselves. These mobs of people are going to impede upon your property. Now, that's going to appeal to 1% of the populace. It's not going to appeal to the percent which cares about economic status, cares about less taxes, tax cuts. That's who Trump wants to appeal to. It's not going to appeal to them by having these people talk about these kinds of social policies. He has to talk about these real, real, real hard policies. Now, if he had somebody who was smart, who had experience, for example, if we had maybe Mitt Romney, if they had Mitch McConnell talk about policies, and maybe even a stance for Trump or against Trump, that's, I think, the goal here, to have people who are educated, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, Ted Cruz, come out and talk at the convention. But having these people is counterproductive because it's not talking about gaining the American vote. It's talking about playing upon that kind of emotional attach that people have had with Trump. But that emotional attach is diminishing. That string is diminishing. That string is being cut day after day after day. And one one of these days, that emotional attach is going to completely dissolve. And there's nothing you can do to support that emotional attach if it's not backed up by real hard policy. That's what I believe in. I think that we're getting away from the point here talking about the RNC, but that's going to be a determination of who succeeds in this election. I am going to watch the RNC.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to...
It may take some of my...
Yeah, I was just going to say, we're going to have... capacity. We're going to have, you know, our special on it as well.
Yeah.
So the yeah, exactly. The same thing that we did for the DNC, we're going to do for the RNC. And I don't think that you can talk one without talking about the other. So I think that it's fair that we're – because I think when the RNC rolls around, we're going to talk about, well, this is what happened during the DNC. So right now we can only speculate what's going to happen. Yeah, exactly. Right now we can only speculate. While you were talking, I was thinking, you know, name of the podcast, Politeen. Obviously, me and you are both teens. And I was thinking about, you know – the trolly nature of Donald Trump, right? Being a troll. That's how he won. He won by attacking, 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 attacking. It really reminds me, and I'm sorry for anyone that doesn't understand this analogy. It's funny because, you know, we talk about how we're young and usually older people are like, oh, you're too, you people are too young to understand this analogy. Yeah. Well, some of you guys might not get this one. I mean, we apologize for that, but the rapper Tekashi 6ix9ine. Now, give me a second. Let me explain where I'm going with this, right? The rapper Tekashi 6ix9ine made his career off of trolling and saying really, really, really dumb and stupid stuff and just attacking random people. But eventually it came back and it bit him. And it bit him hard, right?
Yeah.
And everyone was riding with it for a while. Everyone was riding with him messing around with people. Everyone was, oh, that's just who he is. He's just making jokes. He's just trolling people. But after a while, people were like, he is the joke, right? After a while, it became he is the joke. Because, you know, when something new comes up, it's funny, it's whatever. But now it's gotten to the point where it's like, hey, like, you know, like, cut it out. Like, this was supposed to stop. And that's kind of what we're seeing here with the president. I think that at first it was something unique. It was something different. He was, you know, the number one thing that I always heard. And when I think of a Trump voter, I always think of, well, he speaks his mind. He doesn't sound like a normal politician. He doesn't say what everyone wants him to say. Right. That's what always gets said. It's he doesn't say what everyone wants him to say. But it's now at a point where we kind of want to hear what we want him to say, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, you don't want to hear stuff that's non-politician, like, because right now we need a politician more than ever. Our America right now needs a politician. I think that the more divisive our nation has gotten, I think the more we need a politician to restore that kind of American economic power. We need a politician to understand what we're facing right now and how to get past the bumps and really hitches in this business. Not a business, a nation. Because our nation is not to be run as a business. Because I think that even if it was a business, it would be bankrupt business right now with how Trump's running it. But we can't run it like a business because it is American lives that are at stake. We have the president and the executive branch arguably controls the difference between life and death, and that responsibility should not be abused, should not be taken over, should not be run by Donald J. Trump. And I think that talking about the policies right now, we need a politician, like, again, more than ever, to institute policies to get past this economic hump, to like Joe Biden said, institute a nationwide mask mandate based upon, you know, things from medical people. The problem where Trump is having right now is that Trump runs it just for economic gain, to restore the economic power of America, just to get it back to normal, where the fact of the matter is that we are nowhere near normal and we can't consider our nation as being normal. Now, a politician would take that and say, how do we get back to normal ideologically, socially, and then economically? That's what we have to do as a nation. And that's why we need a politician more than ever right now. Now, one of the most powerful points, Damien, and I don't want to forget this before we end here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Was that on day four of the DNC, before Biden spoke, we had a young kid, I think he was 13 years old.
Yeah, I saw the clip.
He had a stutter, right? He had a stutter, and he had a pretty big stutter. And he talked about how Joe Biden helped him overcome his stutter. And near the end of the speech, he got better. He was slowly overcoming his stutter, just like Biden is slowly overcome his stutter. Now, that hit me on a personal level, because ever since I've been a kid, from 6th to 9th grade, I've had a lisp. I've had a strong lisp. Sometimes it's been hard for me to speak my mind because of the fact that my mind moves faster at times than how I speak. And that impedes upon my speech by giving me a faster speech, not allowing me to pronounce my words enough, having a lisp. And I've overcame that lisp by, you know, sometimes diverting my words based upon what I can and can't say, sometimes focusing upon emphasizing certain phrases, pronouncing certain phrases, like, you know, basically therapeutically enhancing my speech. And that hit me on a personal note because I know how hard that is to recover from. Mm-hmm. It's a very hard thing. And sometimes people don't recover from it. But we have a president, a presidential hopeful, and hopefully our president, who has overcome that kind of big challenge. And that appealed to, I think that we're talking about how it's appealed to everybody in our nation, created that kind of sense of unity, but that appealed to me. And I think that was one of the most powerful things that I've seen out of the whole convention personally.
Yeah, I think it was extremely powerful. I saw it, it was extremely powerful. And I think that it was purposeful and powerful, right? Because sometimes you can have powerful things that aren't purposeful and they don't do anything.
Yeah.
But it was powerful because it showed that Joe Biden, right, he has that influence, and it shows the benefit where it's like, you know, the whole time it's like you wouldn't want your, you know, frankly, even if you support Donald Trump, I don't think that you'd ever want your kid to turn out like him, if you understand what I'm saying.
Would you put Donald Trump in front of your kids as
an
example?
Yeah, I don't think that you'd necessarily want him to be a role model, right? And mm-hmm. that's not an attack. I don't think that I would have supported Bush and his policies, but I'd want Bush to be a role model to my kids. 1,000%, right? That's George W. Bush. The first Bush, what is it? It was 40. Oh,
H.W.
God.
Bush.
Yeah, yeah, H.W. There you go. H.W. I'm assuming, you know, I have less knowledge on his policies, but I'd also want him to be a role model to my kids, someone to look up to. But this is kind of a different situation where it's, you can't really look up to the president. You can respect him and you can support his policies, whichever policies he has. I'm not really, frankly, even aware of them. I know more about policies on guests that we haven't even had on the show yet than I do about our president's policies that we talk about almost every single show. But that's beyond the point.
Wow. Yeah.
I was going to say, oh man, I completely lost my train of thought here. Well, you know, speaking of kind of the point that I'm attacking Donald Trump, something that you didn't see at the DNC was that you didn't see personal attacks on Donald Trump. You didn't see personal attacks where it was like, oh, he's racist. I don't think the word racist was mentioned one time, right? I think that if the tables were flipped, Donald Trump was the Democratic, you know, nominee, or it was the other way around, that he would have called Joe Biden racist. I think that he, you know, he's already attacked Joe Biden's religion. I didn't see Joe Biden attack Trump's religion. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, to back up on your point here, Joe Biden never mentioned the president by his name. He said the guy sitting in the Oval Office, the person occupying the presidency, never mentioned it by his name in the entire 22 minutes he spoke.
That's interesting. I did not notice that. But it just goes to show again that he's not saying this as a personal competition. He's not trying to snoop it to that level. Something that we, a mistake that always hits my mind, and it always makes me think, damn it, is he's a puppet, right? The debate, Hillary Clinton, he's a puppet. Then Donald Trump goes, no, I'm no puppet. You're the puppet, right? Child's play, two kids arguing, two toddlers arguing. You're the puppet. No, you're the puppet. No, you're the puppet. Right here, it's not talking down. He's not talking down onto Donald Trump. He's not, well, he is. Let me explain this. He is talking down, but he's not making it seem that way. And beyond that, by not making it seem that way, he's not on the same level as Donald Trump. He's showing that he's a better and a bigger person. Now, next thing, I think that you can comment on this, but before I lose this idea, we obviously saw a lot of major endorsements this weekend, or this past week, and I think that I want to have your commentary. Do you endorse Joe Biden?
Do I endorse Joe Biden?
Yes.
I have endorsed Joe Biden ever since the beginning of the Democratic debates, so I endorse Joe Biden.
Okay. I will always keep my stance that I will never endorse an individual. I think, but I will say this, I do not endorse neither Trump nor Biden with my name, but I have the, I guess this is a weird way to put it because technically it is an endorsement. I would, if I could, this is the best way to put it. I support a lot of Joe Biden's policies. I don't know all of them. I'm sure that there's several that I can find that I don't support. I endorse policies, not presidents. So that's one thing that I've always stood by and I'm always going to stand by. Endorse policies, not presidents, because there's no president that's ever going to support 1,000% of what you believe in. So I do not, I do not endorse neither. But if I could vote right now, I would vote for Joe Biden without thinking about it twice. And it's very hard because, you know, obviously I've never had the chance to endorse a president. I don't know if this would even be considered a chance, but I've never publicly been referring to who I would endorse as president. But it's almost like, yeah, I want to break my own precedent that hasn't really been set by saying, yeah, you know, I fully endorse Joe Biden, because it's such an unprecedented time that even a precedent that I haven't even set, it's hard for me not to break, right? It's hard for me not to say, hell, I endorse him. But again, I fully back his candidacy. I think that he's the better man for the job at the end of the day. I think that he's the better man for the job, not because he's a Democrat. I think that he's the better man for the job because he's a man and not a boy. And I think that right now we have a boy sitting in the Oval Office.
That's very powerful, Damien. It's very powerful. And I think that talking about the political science behind this whole election and the whole democratic process of voting, having your party, endorsing a candidate, as you said, part of being a democratic citizen and contributing to our representative democracy is coming to a compromise with policies you like and you don't like. You know, we talked about it in our AP government class. Mm-hmm. You pick a political party not because you support every single policy they push forth, but because you support the majority of their policies and make a compromise on the other few policies. But you support the policies that you support relentlessly. And that's the real beauty of American politics. You can find flaws in your party's democratic policy, but at the end of the day, you have to kind of make it clear which party you support. And that's really important going into the election. Now, I don't support with every single policy Joe Biden supports. I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm pro-life except for in times of rape or incest. That's my stance. It will always be my stance. It may change, but for now, that's my stance. And that's not a Democratic stance. I think that's more of a stance that George W. Bush took. But that's going to be something I have to compromise on with Joe Biden in the presidency. Now, I think that being the beauty of American democracy is coming to that compromise. And you talked about how, I think I want to back up on this point, even though it's kind of out of the place.
No worries.
Talking about democracy. It's about how Hillary and Trump kind of had their debates a couple of years ago, 2016. What I saw back then in the debates, and we haven't had a debate this year yet, I hope we do, have the chance to with the virus going on. But the problem was that you said they called each other puppets. But the thing that I found a flaw in what Hillary was doing was when she, I don't think she contributed as much to that kind of boyishness or little girlishness that we had going on. But I think that in not contributing to it, she was kind of exhibiting kind of a smug feeling. She had this feeling that she was better than him. Well, she was. But I think that having that smug kind of emotion, having that smug kind of connotation coming out, and it may be controversial, but I think that may have lost her some kind of role between voters, because I think Republicans and centrists saw that as her being smug and not being the right candidate, having that kind of not the right personality, empathy. I have never seen Joe Biden as smug.
Yeah.
I've never seen Joe Biden as smug. I may have seen him as slow. I may have seen him as kind of mentally challenged. I've never seen him as smug. Yeah. And that's what I think defines his candidacy. Now, I do want to mention Hillary Clinton, Damien, because when I saw Hillary Clinton go up, I told my dad, I was like, oh no, this woman again. She lost as the presidency in 2016. And I blamed her for everything, man. She has been coming out and basically blaming Russia, blaming everybody who she sets a hand on for the presidential loss in 2016. Whereas she has nobody to blame but herself. Now, the issue is she's not the issue, but the beautiful thing was that she came up there on Wednesday night, and she spoke without ever mentioning or barely mentioning, I didn't notice it, if she did mention it, her election in 2016. She never mentioned it. And she never mentioned the poll numbers, never mentioned Russia, never mentioned the fact that you got a higher popular vote than Donald Trump. She only mentioned Joe Biden. And that's what I saw in Bernie Sanders as well on Tuesday. It was that never mentioning the poll numbers, never mentioning what happened in the election, and not being salty. She was unequivocally placing her backing upon Joe Biden. And that's what I think is beautiful. Hillary Clinton's speech, despite what I have to say, despite what our viewers have to say about Hillary Clinton, her speech was beautiful. And I can say that with a verdict and with a vindication in my heart. She had a very beautiful speech in that she mentioned her flaws that she saw with the president. And I think that it was almost comparable to Michelle Obama's speech in the quality of it, in the content of it, in the sheer brevity of it. And in talking about Hillary Clinton, I want to kind of mention one other point. We would have never had speeches like these in an actual DNC, in-person DNC. Because we would have had politicians tailoring their speeches towards applause, towards gaining recognition. We would have had energetic speeches. We would have had speeches that were trying to get applause, trying to get people moved out of their seats, standing ovations. These speeches were not for applause. I would compare these speeches to almost like Roosevelt's fireside chats. They were talking directly to the American people, going inside homes, going inside offices, and directly contacting these people. And this was something that's never been seen before in terms of seriousness. Like, imagine, Damien, Obama delivering a speech to a crowd of 30,000, 3,000 people. Would he have delivered the serious speech that he delivered to 3,000 people? I don't think he would have. I think he would have delivered a much more passionate, energetic speech, which
a happy speech,
a speech of hope like Obama's been pushing forth. And that underscores what's going on in our nation right now. The sheer somberness, the idea of no applause, the idea of a quiet arena, that underscores and complements the tension that we are facing and makes it very, very, very clear to the American people that this election is for the heart and soul of our nation, for American lives, and for a return to normalcy.
Well, yeah, it's almost like that lack of audience was an audience, if you understand what I'm saying. It was almost symbolic of the fact that right now you don't hear applause in it. It was a silence that was noticed. Right now you're not hearing applause because we've had a president that wasn't able to keep us safe. We had Italy recover in 3 months. We had France recover in 3 months. Despite what you want to say about China's numbers, at the end of the day, you know, people say, oh, they're not testing anymore. I genuinely believe, and that's just because of the fact that they're a communist country, that if someone got coronavirus, they'd make them stay home for 14 days. Where in the United States, it's like, oh, it's recommended, blah, blah, blah. And that's the beauty about democracy, right? There's flaws and kinks in both systems. And I think that one of them is just the fact that we can't really, like, I mean, it's not a flaw. Obviously, everyone needs to have their freedom. But if you were to look at it in a time where, you know, right now you need to be commanding, I think that one thing that I was talking about, and I just want to hit on one point really quickly, which is going to be this. One thing that I was talking about was the fact that, you know, I was talking to someone and they said, oh, the second it's going to be okay, everything's going to be okay, because the second that Joe Biden gets into office, he's going to mandate masks. And I hope he doesn't. I really hope he doesn't. Now, let me explain why. Because with a mask mandate, it's not going to do anything, okay? It's not going to do anything. What he needs to do is do what the president hasn't done. It's not about mandates. Mandates make the American people feel like they're being forced to do something, right? He needs to exemplify. He needs to go out and give every single press conference he has in a mask. He needs to be seen wearing a mask. He needs to advocate for masks. Now, that's to say, if we don't have a cure by then, right, which we might not. But he needs to go out and say, you know, masks, masks, masks. And that's the way that you're going to get the mask mandate that you really want. Some people might disagree with that point. Others may not. But going on to kind of the backing, I was going to say, you know, the silence was a character in the room, in every single room. I think Jill Biden used it the best, you know, in the school setting, that the hallways are silent. And it's so different, right? And I think that it was used powerfully. I don't know if it was used purposefully, right? I don't know if it was on purpose, but it was definitely, you know, looking back on it, it was powerful. One thing that I wanted to go backtrack on was we talked about Hillary Clinton and we talked about Bernie Sanders, and we can talk about all these amazing people. And we were, you know, earlier we were going to talk about Mitt Romney. I was just thinking about it right now. It would be pretty cool if Mitt Romney would have showed up to the DNC. Obviously, I didn't think that he was going to, but, you know, that would have been crazy. But beyond that, that was literally just a random train of thought that I was having. Julian Castro didn't show up.
Oh, yes, man. I'm glad you brought this up.
Yeah,
really
I was thinking about it. Obviously, it's not going to be this. It's odd because I'm not expecting Mitt Romney to show up to the RNC or make an appearance in the RNC. And I don't think many people remembered, you know, with all due respect to Julian Castro, I don't think many people remembered him, but in his absence, he was remembered, if you understand what I'm saying. What is the takeaway? What is the situation here? Why do we think what happened? Why do you think Julian Castro wasn't there?
Well, you have to understand what the implications were. We had people on Twitter tweeting out, where's Julian? We tweeted out, where's Julian? I talked about how Julian Castro has been a savior of the people, a people's champion, ever since he's been HUD secretary under Obama. Now, the takeaway is that I think part of the issue is that I think maybe Joe Biden may not have wanted Julian Castro in the DNC, because if you remember, Julian Castro had a very, very weird exchange between Biden and himself. I don't know if you remember, but Julian Castro was basically going against Biden on the fact that he was old and the fact that he didn't have, I guess, the young mindset to run this democracy in the debate, if I'm not mistaken. So I think maybe that played into it, the fact that Julian Castro was so fervently against Biden. Now, I don't think it did, because I know Joe Biden and Julian Castro have been good friends, and camaraderie has been there amongst this virus and this situation and the election that happened. But I honestly, Damien, I don't know, because Julian Castro, his people first policing policy, he released these policing guidelines that Democrats waited till the death of George Floyd to release. They had no incentive to release. Julian Castro had those guidelines before George Floyd happened, before these kind of racial protests happened. He had this all in place. Julian Castro was a people's champion ever since, like I said, he was under Obama as HUD secretary. Mm-hmm. He has just been a voice of reason to a lot of people. And people saw his absence as a bashful mindset, because the entire conference has been about the people, appealing to the people. And Julian Castro would have been the exact embodiment of appealing to the people. And I honestly, you asked me that question, I have no idea, to your point. Yeah. I think it was not vindicated. It wasn't supported. There was no reasoning behind it. But Julian Castro took it like a champ, like he always does. He was tweeting on Twitter. I saw his tweets. He was like a great performance, was tweeting out every single hourly on the speakers, the quality of the convention, his thoughts on the convention. He has always been an active voice and never keeps his sentiments down there. He's been a supporter of Biden for a very long time. I don't see the reason why he wasn't put there.
Yeah. I wonder – you know, obviously everything at this point is speculation. I don't think that there's anything been confirmed, but was it, well, I'm asking you, was he not invited? Has that at least been confirmed, that he was not invited? Or do we not even know if he just decided not to show up?
I don't think he's invited, because if you think about Julian Castro and what he is, the person that he is, he's endorsed Biden countlessly. He would not show up for a DNC endorsing Biden. I don't think there's any reasoning for him not to show up.
Yeah,
that's why the confusion was so apparent, because Julian Castro, if you think about it, has endorsed Biden countless times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I don't think that Biden's the type of person to hold a grudge either. So it's very odd, because, I mean, obviously you can look at who he has as vice president right now, Kamala Harris. I mean, if you know, she attacked him publicly. So if we're going to talk about an awkward exchange, we have to talk about that one. And hell, she's in the running for vice president now. So it's a very odd situation with Julian Castro. I can only make the assumption that does he hold a position right now?
No, he does not. I hope he gets a position in the administration under Biden. But
I'm wondering if maybe he's might be deciding, you know, obviously I hate speculation, but could you think, this is the way that I'll pose it, do you think that maybe he could be deciding to retire from politics?
I don't know, but I also want to make the point that I don't think a politician like Julian Castro ever retires from politics.
Yeah.
If you get what I'm saying, I think he's always going to be in politics in spirit, in opinions and mindset. I don't think he's ever going to retire.
Yeah. It's just such an odd situation, to be honest. I think that he's an amazing individual, and I think that he always has been. I mean, I can't think of any reasons that he wouldn't show up. Now, on the other side, I could see reasons why certain people wouldn't show up to Donald Trump's RNC. But is the RNC going to be in person, or are they also doing the same thing as the DNC?
So here's the weirdest thing, and I want to mention one thing before I mention this. Going along this point of having mask mandates, like you mentioned, Biden embodying wearing masks. I think wearing masks does a lot, but the people who are not going to wear a mask are not going to wear one if Biden's wearing one, if administration officials are wearing one. They don't support Biden. They don't see him as a reasonable person. They don't see him as a pragmatic person. They see him as the embodiment of control upon the American people, and they're gonna think that if he has a mask mandate. Yes, they are. But at the end of the day, they're going to have to follow it. And Biden's been doing this, Damien. Biden's been wearing a mask everywhere. After the convention, he came outside to a, and this is kind of ironic. His dad was a big car advocate, a car salesman.
Yeah, and for Chevy.
He had and he had a drive-in, a makeshift drive-in outside the DNC Convention Center. Uh-huh. And he had fireworks out there, which is cool. But he was wearing a mask the entire time. He walked out of the convention wearing a mask. And this was the first time I have seen, and this is weird because my dad's like, why the hell is Kamala Harris and her husband not hugging and treating and standing this far apart from Joe Biden? I was like, Dad, you got to consider, we have a virus going around. Yes, they're getting tests, but half the American people aren't getting tests. Think about how that affects them. They're coming out and talking about being appealing to the common man. Well, the common man isn't getting a test.
Yeah.
The common man has to stay 6 feet away. So why don't we embody that common man? This was the first time they came around and they actually were within 6 feet of each other with a mask on, but they were within 6 feet of each other.
Yeah.
And that's a statement. But they walked outside with a mask on regardless, went up on the stage, socially distanced, kind of drive-in, and they saw these events. And that's an embodiment of who they are, masks up with Joe Biden. Now, I think your point was I'm forgetting your point.
It was the RNC. I want to say just quickly. This has always pissed me off beyond anything. It has always pissed me off that why doesn't Donald Trump wear a mask? Oh, he's the most tested man in America. Well, it's like
it's not about him.
No, it's exactly. It's like, okay, so it's about the symbol. And at the end of the day, you can say whatever you want about a politician, but politicians are symbol. Why does it matter if you knee for a flag? It's a cloth. It's because of what the flag symbolizes. That's what the mask symbolizes. It may just be cloth, but it symbolizes unity and caring out for one another. But yes, I would like to know your response to the RNC being held in person or not. Do you know?
And before that, one more point. I want to bring up one small point.
Go for it.
The fact that I think it's more reasonable for Joe Biden not to wear a mask than it is for Donald Trump to. Because if you think about it, who is voting for Donald Trump? These young, poor, suburban, white voters who don't have the means to get tested. Whereas Joe Biden is appealing more to the wealthy people. Do you think so?
I think it's switched. I think it's gone.
I think the Republican Party has appealed to poor voters for a long time.
I don't think that it's the Republican Party anymore, though.
You make a good point. You do. And I do want to continue on this. This is a discussion for another day.
Yeah.
That's a good point, though. I'm rethinking this. Like, I keep an open mind. I'm rethinking my position on that. You're right. Yeah. And talking about the RNC, I had a friend who has a mom who might go out to the RNC and actually volunteer for them. And I asked him, why would she be volunteering for a virtual event? And he's like, it's not, man. We have 400 delegates, even more people coming in and observing that conference. 400 delegates. Every single one of them is going to be in the RNC like a regular convention. There's almost 1,000 volunteers, he said, who are going in like his mom going in. And I suspect none of them are going to be wearing a mask. That's my position. None of them are going to be wearing a mask. It's going to be a totally, totally bogus event. And the other part of it, Damien, is that we have Melania Trump's Rose Garden speech going out. Trump has a speech at the White House, some kind of peripheral garden going on. And the reason why they're doing it there, Damien, is because they want to have a crowd. They want to have a crowd. Because if you think about it, what does Trump pull upon? A crowd. And what is that? Yeah, he has a crowd mentality kind of speech mindset. And he's going to be having a speech in front of thousands of people. They say thousands, they say hundreds. The numbers fluctuate every single day. Like the numbers at that Tulsa rally fluctuated, but besides the point.
These people, they say, are fluctuated.
He says these people are going to be socially distanced.
Yes.
I don't see anyway. Like he said about the Tulsa rally, they're going to be socially distanced. Was anybody wearing a mask? No. Was anybody socially distanced? No. Did that result in peaking cases in Tulsa? Yeah. So that's the situation the RNC right now.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just child's play.
Well, I do think it's strategic for them.
Yeah, no, it's not strategic. It gives Donald, man, with all due respect to the president of the United States of America, I won't even comment on it. It's just ridiculous that he needs a crowd to feel like a man. And you are talking into a goddamn microphone with no one watching. We're going to post this a little bit later. If you catch Donald Trump doing this, he's going to be crying. He always has to be doing everything. Imagine him making a speech in front of no one. Come on. It's ridiculous.
It would be an absolute. It's ridiculous. It would be terrible,
stupid.
Man.
Yeah, it's horrible. Horrible because, well, first of all, he doesn't give speeches. He gives mental rants, which is ironic. I think we give mental rants for an hour and people listen to them. But again, he's the president of the United States. And coming from someone who has been perceived as extremely arrogant to someone else who is extremely arrogant, it is absolutely disheartening and completely sad that he represents the narcissistic community like this. We don't all need a crowd, okay? It's just disappointing. It's disappointing that he really needs a crowd. Because the people volunteering there, right? I feel bad for them. Obviously, everyone's entitled to their own political opinions. But man, I feel bad for them because you're not gonna have a millionaire volunteering. And if you do have a damn millionaire volunteering, he's gonna be getting 8 tests every day, right? He's gonna be getting tested 3 times a day. Yeah. But the basic person that's going to go there and volunteer, who's been tricked, I'm sorry, they have been tricked into thinking that this is the right thing to do. With all due respect to everyone who's volunteering for the RNC, you are a true patriot. Let me tell you that. Because you are going and doing something that you think is right for your political beliefs, which is something that a lot of people can't say they've done. So first of all, kudos. Second of all, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you really perceive this as the best thing to do, and you're doing it for a man who, if you die tomorrow, would say it is what it is. That's all I have to say. If you die tomorrow, he's not going to say, my dearest condolences, I know what it is to have that black hole eating inside of you. You know, that's not what he's going to say to your family. To your family, he's going to throw his shoulders up and he's going to say, it is what it is, right? So it's disappointing. Wow. It's disappointing that you're taking your time to volunteer for someone that doesn't care about you.
Wow. I think we should take a pause and think about that. That's pretty powerful, Damien.
It's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
And to your point, I think they might test the people. It's all up in the question, all up in the air. I think they have the budget to test the people. And they might do it because if you think about it, Trump's going to be walking around. Pence is going to be walking around without a mask on. Trump's in his 70s. He has a pretty high risk.
Brother died. Has he said anything about his brother dying?
No, he hasn't. That same day, while Joe Biden came out and tweeted about how condolences to the president and his family.
Hope we tweeted it.
Recovered during this tough time. We tweeted it. Joe Biden tweeted it. And Trump went on 10 minutes later to bash Fox News for their poll numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all I've got to say. We mentioned that. It's just, man.
It just relates to his empathy.
Talk about a testament to it.
Yeah. I think they might test the people, though. Because if you're going to see Trump and all these delegates walking around, I think they're not going to test them for the people's sake. They're going to test these people for the president and these delegates' sake. Because if they get the virus, it's game over, man. I think there's a bunch of delegates here who genuinely need to support the Republican Party, and I think that's why they might test the people. But if they don't, well, it is what it is for the Republican Party, and it is what it is for these people.
Yeah.
Because if they die, that's Republican voters you're losing.
Yeah, I'd love to see the president go out and shake all of his delegates' hands, and shake all of his constituents' hands, right? Or will all of his supporters there, since he's such a tough macho man that doesn't need a mask and is getting tested all day? Man, it's hard. It's hard because we're in a position where obviously we're the youth, and some might argue that we're not as informed. But one thing that doesn't take, right? One thing that doesn't take education, doesn't take youth, doesn't take experience, doesn't take growth, doesn't take development is having empathy for people, right? It's almost as something. Obviously, it can be trained into you, and it definitely is. But it's almost human nature to feel sincere when someone has a loss, and it's almost you have to think, and this is what's really getting to me. You have to think Trump didn't say anything about his brother, and I don't know if he has, but still hasn't said anything about his brother because of the fact that it would look bad on him politically.
He wants to come off as strong, and I think strength also comes from
strength
also
is acknowledgement.
Acknowledging.
Yeah, strength is acknowledgement.
Strength is acknowledgement when you've lost something in life. When you've lost something and you acknowledge it instead of hiding it, that's the sign of true character and a sign of true strength.
Yeah.
Joe Biden didn't run for president in 2016, I think mainly because Beau Biden died and he was recovering. Mm-hmm. And Trump, the fact that he never even acknowledged Robert Trump, his brother's death, it shows a lot about who he is. But also we can't ever undercut how much he's feeling because I think as much as we do bash upon Trump, he's a person after all. And he may be feeling things inside that he doesn't want to push forward.
Yeah.
But I think he should just destroy that mindset if he wants to have any chance of winning the election in 2020. The mindset of having strength pushed forth by non-acknowledgement, by pushed forth is basically the ignoring everything going on right now. I think strength comes from acknowledgement. Strength comes from having that kind of moral compass. And I think Trump, to say that is strength, to say not wearing a mask is strength, to say not having compassion is strength, goes beyond what strength is to me, to Americans, and to what American voters think of strength as. Now, I think me and you were in a law class, and our law teacher said that to wear a mask is to show respect towards me and my family because we're at risk. And I've seen a lot of teachers in my classrooms, my in-person classrooms, say that. And it really is. Wearing a mask is a sign that you are a compassionate person, and compassion most directly relates to strength.
Yeah. Yeah, it 1,000% does relate to strength. Next week, tune in to Politatine Wednesday and Friday. You know, might fluctuate. We're trying to get really heavily back on schedule. Hopefully, we're gonna have a guest on a special guest on this Monday. While we were recording, we got a message saying that we might have a guest confirmation for this Monday. So stay tuned for this Monday. I wanna end. You know, we always end on one final question. So I wanna ask you one question. I think that Donald Trump can win. As much as we don't want to say that I think don't want to say is a wrong term. I think as much as it might look like it's not, it most definitely is a battle, and the battle is between the RNC and the DNC. So I think that Trump can win this battle if he opens up, right? He opens up his speech, whatever speech he gives, the same way. I mean, I'm talking almost word for word what Joe Biden said. I have lost my brother. I know what it feels like. We must come together. That needs to be the message. He can win.
That would be a powerful speech.
He can win if you know, we talk about political gain. If he has absolutely no heart, no soul, he should at least use it for the American people and give them some. He should at least give the American people some hope by using his brother in that sense to give people hope, to say, I understand what it is. We need to come together. You know, I think almost like I forgot his name. Senator died, ran against Obama in 2008, John McCain.
John McCain. Yeah.
Yes. Almost when John McCain, you know, he was at a town hall. She said, I'm scared of Obama. You know, one of his constituents asked him, I'm scared of Obama. You know, I think that he's Muslim and that he's working for, you know, this blah, blah, blah. And John McCain cuts her off and says, no, ma'am. Obama is an amazing man and he's going to be a great president. That's what we need. We need, you know, Donald Trump to go out and say in the RNC, if I were to lose, you're going to be in good hands. You're going to be in good hands, but it's not going to happen. Your thoughts?
No. I would like it to happen because right now we're in a battle for the heart and soul of our nation. And him saying that would undercut the battle for the heart and soul of our nation because that would mean he has a soul. And that means that we're not fighting for that. And that principle is something that I've valued in Joe Biden, valued in the Democratic Party for a long time. I valued in people like John McCain, valued in people like Mitt Romney, valued in people like John Kasich, that compassion for the American people. And the willingness to understand when you've lost and to be compassionate towards it. I think it's not going to happen, Damian. But if it does and he plays his cards right, I think a lot of people would be valued and directed towards supporting him. They would be more inclined towards supporting the current president based upon what he says at the RNC. Because the RNC is a big fundraising event. But more than a fundraising event, it is a designation of policy, a designation of why you should vote, a big old advertisement. And this year more than ever, you know, this year more than ever, because you're not cutting anything out. Everything that is put out there, they tricked the press. And this is what Pod Saves America said. I'm not going to take credit for it. They tricked the press into basically thinking of it as they're airing a two-hour advertisement every single day. Because the DNC, if you look at it the past couple of years, has not been a big old advertisement. It's been a conglomerate of ads, conglomerate of you know, CNN commentators speaking, a conglomerate of advertisements by actual like companies. But this year, it is more than that. It is just a two-hour fucking freaking advertisement for the American, I'm really passionate on this podcast.
No, don't worry about it, man.
It's a three-hour advertisement. And right now, I want to end on the fact that we're battling for the heart and soul of our nation. So as Michelle Obama said, this November, I think 74 days from now, go out, pack your lunch bags, pack some good shoes, stand out there, pack a raincoat, pack everything you need, and vote in this election. If you can't vote, if you're at risk, drop your ballot into a ballot box, which is the most effective approach, I think, with the whole USPS thing going on, or put a mail-in ballot. Keep contacting the person to make sure they've received your ballot, and do not stop until you have made your voice heard for America, because right now we're in a battle for the heart and soul of our nation. As Joe Biden said, as we always say on the podcast, silence is complicity. He said that in his speech. We're going to say it today, as we always do. And on silence is complicity. Have a conversation. Use your voices. Visit www.polititeenpodcast.com to invest in our initiative, to talk about and to look at different sources for information that you can find on our website, and just to get involved with what we're doing here at Polititeen. Email us, contact us, message us with any recommendations, constructive criticism, or feedback on our podcast. And with that said, peace out, you guys. Tune into our next episode this Monday, and have a great rest of your weekends.
Yes, and once again, like Varun said, just want to end on the point. I think something very strong is we have to, you know, be sure to, if you are healthy, sign up to be a poll worker. Me and Varun, I think, are going to tweet right now. We're going to have it as our pinned tweet, so you guys will be able to find it very quickly. It's at Polititeen Show. We're going to link how you can sign up to be a poll worker in your area. You know, me and Varun, I think we'll talk about it. We'll try to figure something out. But we want to make sure that you guys always have a conversation. And a voice that was missing, I think, you know, not to undermine Varun's kind of a closure of the podcast here, but I think that a voice that was missing throughout the whole DNC was that voice of John Lewis. So while you might get in trouble for signing up to be a poll worker, go out and get in some good trouble. You know, you can be 16 and sign up to be a poll worker in the state of Georgia. So go out, get in some good trouble. Have conversations between now and the election. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning into today's episode. And as always, have a wonderful rest of your day.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Polititeen Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/polititeenpodcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/polititeenpodcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/polititeenpodcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.polititeenpodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Polititeen. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.